This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. When the world seems to shine like you've had too much wine.
That is crooner Dean Martin singing about his love of pizza and pasta, and there are plenty to love about those dishes. And yes, we are headed to Italy for this hour of All Sides for a culinary tour de force. Courtesy of a new cookbook that will transport us all over the country, from major cities to little-known towns and villages, for authentic recipes created and inspired by the people and places there. And if you think you know Italy and Italian cooking, think again. You are sure to learn something new. I know I did in this beautiful cookbook. Joining us now is J.M. Hirsch, a James Beard award-winning food and travel writer, the author of 6 books, and he serves as the editorial director at Christopher Kimball's Milk Street, which is familiar to PBS viewers and listeners here to 89.7 NPR News. He and Kimball co-wrote Milk Street, Back Road, Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. Welcome back to All Sides, J.M.
Thank you so much. So glad to be here.
This cookbook is absolutely beautiful, and it is a big book, too. Listeners, my only caution is that you cannot look through this cookbook on an empty stomach, trust me. So, JM, you've written about Italian cooking. What made you and Christopher Kimball decide that you wanted to contribute something new? You know, there's been a lot written about Italian cooking over the years, but why did you feel like you had something new for this book?
Well, you know, we go to Italy fairly frequently at Milk Street. Obviously, it's a cuisine we and many Americans love. So we visit all the time. And of course, when you go, you find the usual suspects, you know, the dishes that you expect to see on the menu. But every time we went, we were always shocked by how little we actually knew about real Italian cooking. Mm-hmm. Every time we'd go, we would be introduced to new recipes, new ingredients, new ways of cooking that we were unfamiliar with. And you know, and you think you know Italian food. I mean, that's probably one of the most common cuisines in the United States. And yet we go, and every time we were wonderfully surprised. And you know, over time, those surprises started to accumulate. And we realized, you know, there's something here. Let's assemble all of these recipes that, you know, obviously very common in Italy, but are less known here, the U.S., and let's really dig into that. And so it was a fun project, and a delicious one, too.
I'm sure, very delicious. But I can't imagine, like, of all people, Christopher Kimball and you, J.M. Hirsch, learning something new. I figured you would know everything about Italian cooking. Is there always more to learn out there?
There really is. And, you know, and I think that's the joy of going someplace like Italy, because, again, you do think you know it, you know, and it's such a common cuisine that you think you understand it. You think there's nothing left to surprise you. And yet every single time we go, we turn a corner and something surprises us. And even in the dishes that we actually specifically think we know, we get surprises, and they do it differently. They do it better. They do it with a different ingredient, or, you know, whatever. It's always a pleasant surprise, and there's always more to learn.
If I know Italians at all, they certainly think they do it better, right? there are so many recipes in this book that stood out for me. We'll talk about several of them throughout this hour, but how did you find the people for the dishes that you featured? Because you talk with a lot of specific people about their style of cooking.
You know, that's what I love about this book. It's really a change in how we approached cookbooks, because for this book, it was very important to us that we not just present great recipes, but that we present the stories of the people and places behind those recipes. And you know, it comes down to basic old school reporting skills. And, you know, I've been a journalist for some 30 years now. You know, I land in Rome. I rent a Fiat and I head out into the countryside, and a lot of it is word of mouth, to be honest. You know, I will do tons and tons of Googling and searching and phone calls and emails before I ever get on a plane. But I always leave lots of room for serendipity. You know, there are far worse things you can do than go into the local pasta shop and ask who in town makes a great whatever, you know? And pretty soon you'll find yourself sitting at somebody's table and they'll be making some pasta that you've never heard of before and that just blows your mind. And there is so much power in that just wonderful serendipity of just being introduced to random people who just blow you away with the love and attention that they give to their food. I always say that no matter where in the world I go, but gosh, especially in Italy, I'm always amazed by how welcoming people are and how eager they are to invite us to their table and share real intimacy with us and share their cooking, share their food, share their families and their history and their traditions. And, you know, if somebody knocked on my door in the middle of the day and said, what are you making for dinner tonight? Can I come in and watch you and take photographs of you and write down everything you say? I'd say, no, please leave me alone. But, you know, around the world, I'm always wonderfully amazed by how welcoming people are and how eager they are to share these things.
You chuckled before when I made the generalization that an Italian cook would tell you that their way is the best way to do it. But I'm referring mostly to my 100% Italian grandmother, who would tell me that there is only one proper way to do everything, right? Did you come across that? You know, maybe it's just the nonnas, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, and it's really funny because, you know, as is common around the world, you know, one house will do it one way. The house next door is going to do it another way. The house three blocks down is going to do it a different way. And, you know, but everybody knows the right way, of course.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. This is our spring membership drive. We count on listeners for the most important part of our budget, and we rely on listener support to bring you great programs every day. Please make a gift right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We have a great thank you gift today for all of our listeners who love cookbooks. More specifically, for our listeners who love cookbooks and love public radio and public television. For a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer, we will send you a beautiful, brand new cookbook from Milk Street. It's called Milk Street Backroads Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. This is an amazing and beautiful book. Not only does it include 175 delicious recipes, but it also tells the stories behind Italian dishes that you know and love. You are going to love this beautiful cookbook, and you'll be supporting public radio at the same time. Forget everything you know about Italian food and take a true journey to Italy with this book. It's $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120. Give at WOSU.org or call us 866-897-9678. If you listen to All Sides every day, then today is the perfect day to show your support for this show. The team at All Sides is working hard to cover a diverse range of topics. We cover the news of the day. We cover long-term trends. We take on national issues with a Central Ohio perspective. If having a talk show on the radio that is truly local is important to you, now is the time to act. Support this station and support this show with your gift right now. Give at WOSU.org, and you can learn more about this cookbook. You can see the cookbook at our website. Again, it's the Italy cookbook from Milk Street, and it's your gift for a monthly gift of $10 a month or make a one-time gift of $120. But don't wait. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And I want to say thank you to Tamara King of Columbus. Tamara writes, "You are a large part of my life and I appreciate it." Thank you, Tamara. And Carla Williams of New Albany, thank you so much for your gift of support. And we are talking about Italian cooking with J.M. Hirsch, a James Beard Award-winning food and travel writer who's the editorial director at Milk Street. So in this cookbook, the regions are very distinctive. You trekked all over Sicily to find a particular dish of, am I saying it right, is Componata? Or
yes.
Yes, okay. See, we're gonna test my Italian today. You know, a perfect dish of Componata. It's a stew like eggplant. Can you tell us where you finally found it?
It was up on a hilltop in truly the middle of nowhere. And, you know, Sicily is one of those places where you look on the map and it's only a few miles from here. I can get there in a few minutes. No. That's not how Sicily works. Because you are going up and down mountains on these switchback roads. It's crazy. It takes you an hour minimum to get anywhere. But somehow we found ourselves at this family's mountaintop home, and they spontaneously threw a party for us. And they brought all the kitchen gear outside and they were cooking over open fires. Some neighbor came over with fresh milk and made ricotta on the spot in a repurposed washing machine tub, which was curious, but it worked. And one of the dishes she made, the wife made, was caponata. And it's a stewy vegetable eggplant-based dish. Delicious and wonderful. I really wanted to see, though, how it's made in Sicily. And she just had a wonderful way of treating each vegetable separately. And rather than kind of like in a stew approach where you just throw everything together and cook it, she would separately cook each ingredient very simply and very easily, and then bring everything together in the end. And the beauty of her technique was that it treated each vegetable individually. And so you didn't have some that were overcooked and some that were undercooked. You just gave each vegetable their due. And I found that across Italy, actually, that there's a deep respect for the ingredients that the cooks work with. And it's not a reverence, it's just a respect. And they know that if a certain ingredient should only be cooked for 3 minutes and another ingredient should be cooked for 10 minutes, well, then you cook each one in its own time and then you bring them together. And that's exactly what she did. And it really made such a difference in the finished dish. It's a wonderful, wonderful dish.
So a version of that is in this cookbook then, right? I mean, it doesn't involve making
Absolutely.
ricotta in a wash tub, but I think, right?
Correct. Although you can, and I highly recommend
So
it.
basically you just adapted this person's recipe, that you,
Yes.
right? Okay.
Correct. So what we do is when we travel, we learn from the experts, and sometimes the experts are professional chefs, sometimes they're home cooks, and they are wonderful enough to share their recipes with us and teach us, and we watch them cook, and I take copious, copious notes, and then I come home and at Milk Street, I share what I learned with our staff cooks. And they, using that, they develop a recipe that sometimes we adapt a little bit to be more easily made in an American home kitchen because we don't always have the same ingredients or the same techniques and frankly the same patience, let's face it. And so, we adapt our recipes to make sure that they work while still respecting the origins of the recipe and the people who taught us.
One thing that people might find surprising, that you feature in this book is that fettuccine Alfredo, Italian style, does not resemble American fettuccine Alfredo at all. So tell
Not
me about
at
it.
all.
Yeah, tell me about
That
fettuccine Alfredo and the con
was a great,
controversy.
yes, that was a great journey. Planes, trains, and Fiats all over Italy to learn that. Fettuccine Alfredo in the United States is very heavy, cream-based, often has mushrooms and chicken thrown in for good measure. It's a very, very heavy, heavy dish. In Italy, it is the epitome of lightness and wonderful cheesiness. It's still quite rich, but it's not heavy like an American version, because first of all, there's no cream in it. And secondly, there's no chicken and no mushrooms. Italians would be appalled at those additions. And it was popularized by first one restaurant, then a second restaurant in the early 1900s in Rome. And a chef made it, put it on the menu. He actually made it for his pregnant wife because she wasn't feeling well. He made it. She said, "You got to put this on the menu." He did. Some celebrities came in, and the rest is history. It became a very popular dish and eventually spread to the United States as well. The part that's lost in the telling of that story is that he didn't actually create this recipe for his pregnant wife. The recipe actually goes back hundreds of years, and it's probably one of the primordial pasta recipes in Italian culinary history. And it's what we would consider buttered noodles, frankly, something that you give a kid when they have an upset tummy, something very simple and plain. And that's what cheese and butter and pasta was considered in Italy and still is, frankly. And so when I went to Italy to learn this recipe, Everybody thought I was nuts. Why would you want to learn this? There's no recipe to it, they would say to me. It's just pasta, butter, and cheese. There's nothing to it. But, you know, as always, when you dig and you dig and you talk to enough people, you eat at enough places. And this was definitely a case where I had to have home cooks show me, because restaurants just don't put it on the menu, because it's just, again, would you put buttered noodles on a menu? Probably not. And they treat it the same way.
Only on the kids' menu. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And that's absolutely the case in Italy. And so in time, we learned, you know, what makes a great fettuccine Alfredo. And it's really, it's all about the way you work those three ingredients, the pasta, the cheese, Parmesan, of course, and butter. And you work them together, tossing and tossing and tossing, which extracts the starches from the pasta. And that binds the cheese and the butter into a sauce that just adheres to those noodles. And gosh, it's good. And it's so simple and light.
Wow. I can't wait to tell my son that when I make him butter noodles, he's actually eating fettuccine Alfredo. He'll look at me like I'm crazy. This is the Spring Membership Drive on 89.7 NPR News, and this hour is all about delicious food and cooking, a favorite topic for many All Sides listeners, and we're asking you to make a gift to support these type of programs. Make that gift at WOSU.org or call us at 866-897-9678. Make a gift of $10 a month and get a brand new cookbook from the team at Milk Street. It's called Italy: Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. Our guest today, J.M. Hirsch, put in the work. He spent time in Italy, the poor man, and he learned stories behind all of the recipes and put those stories into this amazing book. Make a monthly gift of $10 a month, and this book will be yours, and you'll be supporting public radio. This book contains amazing recipes that you can cook at home, from salads to soups to side dishes, from pizza to dessert, and of course, lots of pasta. Learn how to make spaghetti with parsley pesto straight from a kitchen of a chef on the Amalfi Coast. Learn how to make rigatoni with Roman broccoli sauce and spaghetti alla carbonara. This book tells great stories as well. J.M. Hirsch writes about learning to make the perfect pesto. The story says it is possible to smell the color green. And then this was it. That is the pesto that he made. So don't miss your chance to experience the joy of this Italian cookbook. Make an ongoing gift of $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And this book is an extension of the conversation we're having today. As a regular listener to All Sides, you know we're going to cover the important news of the day, the latest from the State House, and the latest happening in Central Ohio. But there's room for shows like this one, a show about cooking and enjoying the time in the kitchen. Get this gift today and support all of the topics we cover on All Sides each and every day. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Thank you to Dorothy Biera, and she says the Reporter Roundtable is a great resource for Ohio politics. Thank you, Dorothy, from Columbus. Thanks for your gift. And thanks for listening to the Reporter Roundtable each week. Now, Jam, I mentioned that pesto. So your story that you wrote in the book, you said, if it is possible to smell the color green, this was it, which is a great way to describe pesto. But tell me about this particular pesto.
Well, you know, it was another case where here in the United States, we think we know what pesto is, right? Mm-hmm. And we, of course, are talking about pesto genovese from Genoa, which is the basil and pine nut and Parmesan. And we think we know what it is. And then, as usual, I go to Italy and they tell me, oh, well, you got it all wrong. You know, you're not doing it right at all. And so I was working with this man who has basically declared himself the protector of all things great about pesto. And he travels the world with a 300-year-old massive marble mortar and pestle. I mean, the thing fits in the back of his car.
No blender for him. Okay, got it.
No blender, no food processor. Yeah. He was appalled when I even suggested a food processor. And, you know, it's the simple things that really make a difference. And this is something, a lesson that I learned over and over again in Italy. He explained to me and then demonstrated to me how much the order of ingredients matters. You know, we would be inclined, and I certainly have done it many times in my life, to just take all the ingredients for pesto, throw them in the food processor, put the lid on, and let it go. that's not the right way to do it. And the reason is, once again, each ingredient needs to be treated in its own way to be its best self. And so the order in which you pound the ingredients, and because that, of course, is the definition of pesto, pestare, to crush and to pound, and it really matters because you want to treat the pine nuts and the garlic differently than you do the basil, which is obviously much more delicate. And so he explained this to me and walked me through the process of turning the garlic and the pine nuts into essentially a paste, and then adding the basil and more lightly crushing that. And so that you still have like a vibrantness and a freshness to the pesto. It's not turned into just a goo, essentially, which is what you get when you just throw everything together. And it made such a difference. And it just exploded with aroma and flavor. Now, he would still be appalled with us because, you know, most Americans don't have 300-pound mortars and pestles in there in the trunk of their car, unfortunately. I would certainly like one. But we did adapt the recipe to the food processor for the American kitchen. But we very carefully followed his respect for how to treat each ingredient. And you can get very good, similar results by adding the ingredients in a certain order to the food processor. And that's what I love about Italian cooking in particular, is that it's not more work. It's just working differently. You know, it's no more work to put the ingredients into the food processor one at a time instead of all at once. And you get such a better result by that just really small change that doesn't actually cause you any more trouble. And that's what I love about Italian cooking. They're really tuned into
All right, so in your book, you allow a food processor, reluctantly,
that.
maybe.
Yes.
You also have a recipe for a Baisley pesto instead of with, or not, or what am I saying? I'm sorry.
Parsley
parsley.
pesto.
Parsley.
Yes.
Yes, I'm combining two words together in my head. It's parsley. Yeah, what's a parsley pesto?
Well, this was something that a chef on the Amalfi Coast taught me. And I'll tell you, it really blew my mind. There's no dairy in this pesto, and he uses fresh parsley, and he blanches it very briefly. I mean, we're talking like seconds. And then he takes it out of the hot water and then throws it in some ice water to cool it off very quickly. And then he continues with the pesto that way, with olive oil and anchovy and not a whole lot else, salt, of course. And it becomes so wonderfully creamy. It just blew my mind. And again, it's this simple respect for the ingredients themselves and just treating them the right way. And it's not complicated, very few ingredients involved in it. And it's again, he just treats each one in its own way. Rather than throwing the parsley into the blender with everything else all at once, again, he blanches it, he cools it, and then he throws, you know, starts assembling it. And I'll tell you, the blanching is really key because what it does is it breaks down the cell structure of the fresh parsley. And that means that when you do puree it, it's going to become so much creamier, so much smoother. You don't miss the dairy at all in that one. It's really fantastic.
And you can find that recipe in our thank you gift today. This is listener-supported 89.7 NPR News. This is All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Support the station you depend on with a gift right now. You know, the news cycle can be relentless, and All Sides has been covering it all, from social justice and race issues to the latest bills moving through the State House. You listen to NPR and WOSU to learn something new and to understand what's happening in the world around you. Make a gift today and support 89.7 NPR News and support this show. Support All Sides. Your gift supports news programs that we bring you each and every day. Become a member this hour, and your thank you gift can be Milk Street's newest cookbook. It's called Milk Street Backroads Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. Give $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120 right now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. This book is the perfect complement to our conversation with our guest today, J.M. Hirsch, who is a James Beard Award-winning food and travel writer and works with Christopher Kimball on Milk Street. The book is full of amazing recipes and beautiful photographs, from the real story of Italian wedding soup to the search for real fettuccine Alfredo. This book has it all. There's a story entitled The Bruschetta of My Dreams and a story about the best tomato focaccia. You can get this brand new cookbook and support all sides. Make a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. And if you are a member of the station already, thank you so much for your support. But if you've been a member at $5 a month for a while, this is a great opportunity to increase your sustaining membership to $10 a month. Your extra support will go a long way towards sustaining the future of public radio. And you can get this Italy cookbook as your thank you gift. You can also consider making a one-time additional gift right now of $120. You could get this great book and add a little something extra in for WOSU to support all the listening you've been doing in recent weeks. If you find yourself depending on NPR for news that you can trust more and more each day, then today is the day to make a gift. Make this membership drive a great success at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. I wanted to talk with you, JM, just for a minute about pasta carbonara, because I spent a semester in Italy studying abroad when I was in college. That was more than 20 years ago, so, you know, a lifetime ago. But when I remember loving anything that involved the word carbonara whenever I was in Italy. And then I came back to America, and anytime I saw it on the menu, I would order it. And it was always different. It never matched what I ate in Italy. So what do the Italians define it differently than we do in America? Is that another Americanized dish like fettuccine Alfredo?
Yeah, it's definitely something that has kind of taken on a life of its own here in the United States. And there are different iterations of carbonara in Italy. Mm-hmm. And I do find that fascinating. There's actually a zucchini-based one where instead
of
the
had with peas. Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, now, the pea one is a very interesting point there. That's actually called – this was fascinating. This was one of the trips I took to Italy was purely because of this recipe. It's called pasta alla papalina, and it's named for a cardinal in the Catholic Church who eventually became pope. While he was cardinal, he went to a restaurant in Rome, and he complained that carbonara wasn't refined enough. because carbonara traditionally calls for guanciale, which is a cured pork product, and pecorino romano cheese, which is very salty, very tangy, very sharp. He didn't feel like that was refined enough. And he asked the restaurant to come up with a fresh version, a more refined version. So they came up with something that substituted prosciutto, another cured pork, but considered a more refined cured pork, apparently, for the guanciale. And instead of pecorino romano, they used parmigiano, and which is, again, considered a more refined choice among the cheeses. And then they added peas because nobody really knows why they added the peas. But sometime along the line, they added peas. And the result is called pasta alla papalina, which is just a phenomenal rendition of carbonara. And it's one of those dishes, again, that we don't often see in the United States. Mm-hmm. And even in Italy, you really don't see it outside of a handful of restaurants in Rome, which is where it was created. And so I love finding things like that. You know, again, we think we know what carbonara is, and then you get introduced to pasta alla papalina or the zucchini carbonara, which, you know, substitutes charred zucchini for the meat entirely. And it's a really different, fresher, lighter take on this traditional dish.
Now, I studied in Rome, so that checks out that I found it in Rome. But I remember there being egg in it. Is that true?
Yes. Yep. Okay. Carbonara will always have an egg in it. Sometimes just a yolk, sometimes a whole egg. Kind of depends on who's making it. And how you add that matters greatly, because you don't want to do it over heat, for example, because you're going to scramble your egg instead of letting it emulsify and create a really luscious, thick, rich sauce, which is the key there.
I want to say thank you to Ann Wood from Columbus, who is a longtime supporter and tells us to keep up the good work. Thank you, Ann, for your gift. I mentioned a few minutes ago the real story of Italian wedding soup, and I would love for you to tell that story.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. You know, again, it's one of those things we think we know what it is. I seem to keep saying that, but it's true. You know, here in the United States, we think we know what Italian cooking is. And we do. We know it, Italian-American cooking, which is wonderful in its own right. But it's not necessarily reflecting how those dishes are prepared in Italy. And Italian wedding soup is an excellent example. I actually kind of went there thinking maybe this is a completely made-up dish that, you know, that here in the United States, we just created along the way somehow. And I will say that the version that we eat here, yeah, is pretty much completely made up. Mm-hmm. But when you go to Italy, you experience a whole variety of Italian wedding soups, which, by the way, conventional wisdom is, oh, real Italians wouldn't eat this dish at a wedding. And that's only partly true. The name actually is, wedding soup is actually derived from the marriage of ingredients in the mm-hmm. pot. And so conventional wisdom is, oh, they don't serve it at weddings. It's named because you're marrying these ingredients in the pot. Well, that is true, mm-hmm. but they also serve it at weddings, which I thought was hilarious. And I love that. It really brings it all full circle. But their version, there are no meatballs in Italian wedding soup in Italy, but there is often meat. It could be pork, it could be chicken, sometimes beef, but that's a little bit less common. And tons and tons of greens, as many greens as you can possibly get in the pot. One of the cooks that was preparing this for me, she took me out into her field and we harvested wild greens and wild herbs. She had a big basket under her arm and it was more greens than I thought possible for any of us to eat in one sitting. But they cooked down and she just made this amazingly wonderful, rich and really simple soup that had just tons and tons of fresh greens in it and chicken. And it was a really wonderful dish and so much more lighter and fresher than a lot of the versions that we get here. And it was just really wonderful.
I'm surprised to hear that it doesn't have meatballs in it, because that just seems like such a staple. Is it, no offense to the Olive Garden, but did the Olive Garden ruin this for all of us?
pretty much, yes.
Did the Olive Garden ruin fettuccine Alfredo as well?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to blame the Olive Garden. Okay. This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is our spring membership drive, and you could support public radio today at WOSU.org or calling 866-897-9678. If you listen to All Sides every day, then you know this show is committed to producing in-depth, focused conversations on issues important to Columbus and Central Ohio. You hear from our weekly reporter roundtable every Monday. Every Thursday, you hear a segment called Fascinating Ohio that introduces you to neighbors from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. You hear facts straight from experts and newsmakers. Support this local talk show that you rely on right now with a gift at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. When you make a gift of $10 a month right now, you can get a beautiful cookbook that we've been talking about this hour. It is from Milk Street, and it's called Italy. And the name says it all. The book is full of 175 recipes straight from Italy. Pizzas, pastas, soups, and more. You are not going to want to put this book down. Not only does it have 175 recipes, but it also has amazing stories. This book will give you the seat at the table of Italian cooks who share their love of food, handed down from generation to generation. Give now at $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Thank you to Patricia Belch from Delaware. We also heard from Janice Nasel from Columbus. Thank you, Janice. And also Hannah Cox from Columbus. Hannah says she listens every day. Thank you for listening. And this book will teach you things that you never knew, like how in Italy, cooks throw away their garlic, or they never labor over a pan of pesto or a pan of risotto. You'll read about making enormous meatballs that are tender and light. And you are running out of time to support All Sides this hour and get this amazing cookbook. Give at WOSU.org or call us at 866-897-9678. And with a gift of $10 a month, you're supporting All Sides. You know, we cover a diverse range of topics. We talk about the economy and politics. We talk about immigration and housing. Support this show with a gift. Get a great thank you gift. And if you listen every day, then today is the day to make that gift. Go to WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Now, I labor over a pan of risotto. Why? And I'm Italian at heart. Why am I doing it wrong?
You know, this is the thing about Italian cooks. We think that they fuss over things, and they really don't. You know, they just cook it. And they understand the way to treat each ingredient, and that's very important. But they don't worry about it, you know? And risotto and polenta are dishes that we think of in the United States as having a laborious side. You know, you have to stand there and you stir and you stir and you stir and you're there for hours, you know, preparing this. No. You're telling, there is not a single Italian grandma who's going to stand at the stove for hours, you know, tending to her risotto, her polenta. I went to Milan, the home of risotto, and it was a rainy, cold night. I walked into this restaurant just as they were about to close, and was the only person in the restaurant. They were very eager to close, but they agreed to let me have a seat, and they presented me with this saffron-infused risotto, which was like a bowl of sunshine. It was just ethereally light and creamy and rich without being heavy. It was amazing. And I said to the guy, look, I realize you want to go to bed, so I won't bother you right now, but can I please come back tomorrow so you can teach me how to make this? Because this was the best risotto I've ever eaten in my life. Mm. And so I did go back the next day, and they don't fuss with it. You know, it's fast. They do stir it a lot, but very quickly. And it is on and off the stove in about 10 minutes. You know, we think of risotto as something that you're just struggling. You're slowly adding the liquid. You know, you're simmering the liquid. You're slowly adding it a little bit at a time to get the starch released from that rice. No, please. They just cook it, and they cook it fast. And it's so good. It's so light. It's really amazing.
Do you explain all of this in your book?
We do, yes, yes.
Oh, I'm going to need to read that section again. Okay, you also tell a story about Tuscany, and you quote a woman who remarks that Tuscan cooks have a lot of respect for leftovers. Mm. She taught you how to make, I'm not sure how to say it, is it aquacotta? Is that
aquacotta?
Aquacotta, yes. Which is a classic Tuscan soup. So does she just make a lot of it? Is that...
No, you know what it is? The Tuscan tradition is to use leftovers.
Mm. I see.
Yes, to create something new. And, you know, that's an example where a lot of the bread in the soup, it's usually stale bread that they've had kicking around, and you turn it into something new. And, you know, it's the same principle that's behind panzanella, the bread and tomato salad, also from Tuscany, that it's so wonderful that they won't let anything go to waste. And it makes sense. You know, Italy historically has not been a wealthy country. And, you know, it's where the term, of course, cucina povera, you know, the poor kitchen cooking comes from. And you make the most of what you have. And that is at the heart of Italian cooking. And in Tuscany in particular, they have a real deep ingrained respect for making sure that you don't waste leftovers. You turn them into something new.
This is the Spring Membership Drive on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm Amy Jarovich. And you could support All Sides today with a gift right now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You're running out of time to make that gift. Thank you to Suzanne Robinson from Columbus. Thank you for supporting the station today. And Suzanne says that she is glad to support independent radio. We are glad to have you with us today, Suzanne. Every day we talk with newsmakers, lawmakers, and experts on this show. We also bring you shows like this one, shows about cooking and delicious food and shows to make you hungry. And this is important to you because the news of the day is important, but taking a break from the news with shows like this one is also important as well. Our thank you gift today is an extension of this conversation. It was carefully selected with you, our listener, in mind. And we have that great thank you gift for everyone who loves a good cookbook. But specifically, for listeners who love cookbooks and love public radio, this book is for you. Give $10 a month as a sustainer, and we'll send you a beautiful, brand new book from Milk Street called Milk Street Backroads, Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. This amazing and beautiful book not only includes 175 delicious recipes, but it also tells you the stories behind Italian dishes that you know and love. You're going to love this beautiful cookbook. You're not only going to cook from it, but you're going to want to read all of the stories. The stories are so engaging. And you are going to be supporting public radio at the same time. The book says to forget everything you thought you knew about Italian food and take a true journey to Italy with this book. $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. And this is a hefty book. It's a beautiful book. It has 175 recipes. The experts from Milk Street put it together with beautiful full-color photographs to help transport you straight to Italy. And get this amazing book for $10 a month right now. And we're not asking you to go outside your comfort zone to make that gift. We're asking you to give what fits into your budget. That's why we created these sustaining memberships. If a one-time gift of $120 doesn't work for you, you can give $10 a month. Giving a smaller amount each month is a great way to support your favorite station at a more manageable amount each month. So do it now before the hour ends. We have less than 15 minutes remaining. We have about 14 minutes to go in this hour. We're looking to hear from 10 more people before the hour ends. So 10 more calls or 10 more gifts online. Support this show this hour in the next 14 minutes, and we can make this hour a great success. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And you chuckled whenever I said that this is a hefty book. I have it here, and I can't really even pick it up. I have to, like, pivot to move. It is. Milk Street always makes beautiful books. Did you talk about, you know, like, whenever you were in Italy, did you have a photographer with you for all the pictures, or did you take the pictures back in at Milk Street?
Oh, no. Well, the finished recipe shots are taken back at Milk Street. Mm-hmm. But all of the travel photography, all of the people, the places, all that, that's all shot in Italy. I've worked with the same photographer now for 9 years. He happens to be based in Rome, although he travels the world with me for Milk Street. And he just does such a wonderful job. It also helps that he speaks Italian, and mm-hmm. makes it a little bit easier to navigate. We shot everywhere across the country. It was very important to us to capture, again, the people and the places behind these recipes. It's the culture, it's the context, it's the traditions. We really wanted to make that come alive.
And we can't talk about Italian food without talking about spaghetti. And you have you write about one that you call killer spaghetti. Why did you name it killer spaghetti?
We didn't, actually. Oh. It's from Puglia. It's a traditional dish, and it's become a viral sensation in the United States just in the last couple of years, actually. And it's a very simple spaghetti with a tomato sauce, a very thin tomato sauce. But the difference is that it's finished in a skillet over very high heat until the pasta becomes charred and the tomato sauce reduces until very thick and caramelized and sticky almost in a good way. And it just really coats the pasta, and the pasta itself becomes a little bit crunchy, a little bit chewy, and a little bit tender, and coated with this rich caramelized tomato sauce. It's a very different way of presenting something, once again, that we mm-hmm. think we know, you know, this mm-hmm. spaghetti and tomato sauce.
I wanted to just jump to, before we run out of time, I want to jump to desserts for a minute, because when you think of an Italian dessert, maybe, you know, either cannoli or a tiramisu comes to mind. Did Americans mess those up too?
Oh, always. Yes. Yeah. I went to outside of Venice in northern Italy to learn tiramisu in the town where it was created. And there are some conflicting accounts for how it was created. Some people believe that tiramisu was a relatively modern creation going back, you know, I think 50 or 60 years or so. But other people actually believe that it long, long predates that and was served as an aphrodisiac in the area's brothels. And for this reason, for a long time, it was considered a dish that you only ate on the down low because you didn't want to be seen eating tiramisu.
Now, I like the idea of secret tiramisu. Okay.
Exactly. Now, I have no idea if that's a true story or not. It depends on who you talk to, but I like it. It's more romantic. It's more interesting. And so it's one of those things that's going to be lost to history, I suspect. But, you know, In Italy, tiramisu is a very, very simple affair. I believe it's like 6 ingredients. And once again, it's how you treat those ingredients. It's how you assemble those ingredients. It's no more work. In fact, it's actually less work. And it's often actually served single serve. You know, we think of tiramisu as a big trifle-like affair that, you know, in a big bowl. But in Italy, it's generally considered a single serve thing that you just put into little cups, and you never, never, ever, ever dust it with the cocoa powder until just before serving, because it's very important that the cocoa powder be fresh and not all soggy on top.
Duly noted. Okay. I want to say thanks to Bernard Yankin from Columbus. Thank you, Bernard. And we also heard from Mindy Wright from Columbus. That means we have 8 more gifts to go this hour, and we have about 9 minutes remaining in the hour. So if we hear from 8 more people, we'll declare this hour a great success. access right now. You're listening to All Sides. During our spring membership drive, we count on listeners for the most important part of our budget. We're relying on you right now. For a gift of $10 a month as a sustainer, we'll send you a beautiful brand new cookbook from Milk Street. Milk Street Backroads, Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. This is an amazing and beautiful book. It includes 175 delicious recipes, but it also tells the stories behind Italian dishes that you know and love. Forget everything you thought you knew about Italian food and take a true journey to Italy with this book. $10 a month right now, or a one-time gift of $120. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And when you get this thank you gift, you'll be supporting public radio. You'll be supporting a show that takes national issues and brings a Central Ohio perspective. If having a talk show on the radio every day that is truly local is important to you, the time to act is right now. Support this station, support this show. We're looking to hear from eight more people in just about eight minutes remaining in the hour. WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. WOSU.org. That's $10 a month right now, and you can get this great book. Earlier in the hour, whenever I was talking about the book, I mentioned the bruschetta of my dreams, which I want to eat right now. What does the bruschetta of my dreams look like?
Well, you know, that's actually, it's a beautiful thing in Italy. It can be whatever you want. And that's what I love about it, you know, and it's bread with something on it, of course. And, you know, something as simple as, oh gosh, my favorite, fig jam, a slice of prosciutto, and a sliver of Parmigiano Reggiano cheese. Oh my God, that is a dream. But I'll tell you, the real bread product of my dreams in this book is the focaccia, the green olive and tomato focaccia. I'm not allowed to make it anymore because when I make it, my husband and I eat the entire pan in one sitting.
There's nothing wrong with that.
I learned this recipe in Puglia, which is the heel of the Italian boot, and from this bakery that had been deemed a couple years before to have the best focaccia in all of Italy. And I have to agree with that. And it is a very different way of making it. It's extremely highly hydrated dough, and they let it rise for far, far longer than we would ever let any bread product rise. And they let it go so long. In fact, it rises, it falls, it rises again, it falls again. And it's so wet as a dough that they literally pour it out of pots into the pans for baking it. And they bake it in just a ton of olive oil. And the result is on the bottom, it's shatteringly crisp. And the interior is perfectly, wonderfully airy and chewy. And then you've got those briny green olives and the sweet acidic tomatoes on top. Oh my God. I got to tell you.
You need to stop talking. I'm like melting here. we're still looking to hear from eight more people before the hour ends. And I promise JM will stop explaining or stop describing focaccia right now when you make a gift. 866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. We're looking for participation this hour. We're looking for you to make a gift. Help us make this hour a great success. For a gift of $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120, you can get this beautiful cookbook from Milk Street, Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. Our guest this hour, JM, put in the work. He spent time in Italy. He learned the stories behind the recipes. He ate the focaccia, and he made this amazing book. And we just heard from Jennifer in Bexley. Thank you, Jennifer. So seven more to go right now. That's how fast it can happen. We can meet this goal. Make a monthly gift of $10 a month, and this cookbook will be yours, and you'll be supporting public radio at the same time. The book contains amazing recipes you can cook at home, from salads to soups to side dishes, from pizza to dessert, and of course, a lot of pasta. $10 a month right now, or a one-time gift of $120. Thank you to Linda from Westerville. So six more to go. And we just heard from Marsha Jones in Pickerington. Thank you, Marsha, for joining us today. So five more to go, and we have about 5 minutes remaining, so we're pacing really well. 866-897-9678 or WOSU.org. We made it all the way to the last 5 minutes of the show, and we didn't talk about pizza. So I'm assuming Americans have royally screwed up pizza as well, but what do Italians consider pizza?
You know, it is a very formal affair, eaten with a fork and a knife. Not you never pick up your slice, and you know it depends on where in Italy you are. And of course, Naples is the hub of pizza, Neapolitan style pizza, very thin crust. Toppings are very sparing, very sparing. You never have like a meat lover's pizza in Italy or anything like that. But you know, we also found some really fascinatingly different pizzas that are actually cooked in a skillet, for example, upside down. And it's really interesting. So, you know, you have onions on the bottom and so forth, and they caramelize on the bottom of the pan. And the dough is on top so that it crisps perfectly. And then you invert it, and you have this gorgeous caramelized onion topping now, used to be on the bottom, for a pizza. And so what we did find is that there are, of course, as with all things, a million ways of doing it, but all of them are interesting and delicious and wonderful. And I have to say, I was not as big a fan of the Neapolitan style, the classic Neapolitan
Oh,
style pizzas, as
blasphemy,
I thought.
blasphemy.
I know, you know.
Yeah. That's
They were
okay. You don't have to like
delicious.
everything. You have to you can you
Yes.
don't have to love everything, but you can like everything, right?
Exactly.
Thank you to Susan Corcoran from Columbus. Four more to go this hour, and we have about 4 minutes remaining in the hour. Again, for $10 a month, you can get this beautiful cookbook from Milk Street. Italy, Italy's Forgotten Recipes. Give right now. Make this hour a great success. We're looking to hear from four more people before the hour ends. The cookbook is $10 a month or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. And before I let you go, Jam, I just have to know what your favorite recipe is in the book. I'm going to make you pick a favorite child. Do
Oh,
you,
okay. Well,
that
that's
we
very
haven't
hard.
maybe that we haven't talked about yet. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll tell you, the conventional wisdom in the United States is that real Italians don't eat spaghetti and meatballs, and that it was an Italian-American creation. And that is true from a certain point of view. That's because a lot of the Italian immigrants who came to the United States came from southern Italy, where meatballs are never, ever served with pasta. It's pasta is a first course, meatballs are a second course, never together. However, when I started digging into it, there actually is a rich and long tradition of eating spaghetti and meatballs in a different part of Italy, the part of Italy that didn't send as many immigrants to the United States. And up in Abruzzo, the meatballs are tiny, tiny. They may be half an inch, not like the big, hefty meatballs that we're used to. And that's because that's from a southern Italian tradition. And so in Abruzzo, the idea is you want multiple meatballs per bite of pasta. So they make them really tiny. And the result is just this wonderfully rich ragu with all these tiny little meatballs, with a very special type of pasta that is actually, you can get it here. It's called chitarra, which is it's a special way of cutting the pasta so that it has kind of a rough edge, and that's important because it releases a lot of starch into the sauce, which means that sauce becomes nice and thick and unctuous and delicious. And the sauce clings to those noodles because of those rough edges. And it is such a wonderful dish. And again, it's one of those things we think we know, and then we go to Italy and our minds are blown because they do it differently. And I'm just gonna say a little bit better.
Nah, well, naturally. Yes, that was that's I think that's the crux of your cookbook is, you know, Italy, here's the way they do it in Italy. You decide is that the better way, right? This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and I want to say thank you to J.M. Hirsch, editorial director for Christopher Kimball's Milk Street, also James Beard award-winning food and travel writer. J.M., thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And again, this is our spring membership drive, and we're down to less than 2 minutes remaining in the hour. We're still looking to hear from four more people to make this hour a great success. I know we can meet this goal, but not until we hear from you. Become a member this hour, and your thank you gift can be Milk Street's newest cookbook. It's a brand new book, and it's called Milk Street Backroads Italy, Finding Italy's Forgotten Recipes. This book is the perfect complement to our guest today, J.M. Hirsch, who is a James Beard award-winning food and travel writer. This book is full of amazing recipes and beautiful photographs, from the real story of Italian wedding soup to the search for real fettuccine Alfredo. This book has it all. And it's $10 a month as a sustainer or a one-time gift of $120 at WOSU.org or when you call 866-897-9678. Give right now and make this hour a great success, and you'll be supporting public radio at the same time. So you get a great thank you gift and you're supporting public radio. This is truly a win-win. This is listener-supported WOSU-FM and HD1 Columbus. We're online at WOSU.org. Make that gift right now at our website. This is the final minute of the hour. We can meet our goal when we hear from you. And if you're already a member, thank you so much. Maybe consider making a small additional gift to make this hour a great success. It's a little something extra to support WOSU. Give now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. Thank you for listening, and thanks for your support. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.